for working the program with the county. You're welcome. Because this is an open meeting, we need not identify yourself nor your reason for being here if you do not wish to do so. Your anonymity will be protected. You ask to protect ours. My name is Darren. I'm a recovered sex addict, and the Taking Action Group observes the CHIP system. We give CHIPs for those celebrating 1 month, 2, 3, 6, and 9 months of continuous sobriety. Does anyone here need a CHIP? We also celebrate annual dates. We've got CHIPs for 1 and 2 years, but there is anyone celebrating one of those anniversaries? Okay. Attending a 12-step meeting is an excellent use of time, but should not be confused with working a 12-step program. Okay, our group consciously believes that recovery comes from working the steps with a sponsor. Okay, now if you don't have a sponsor, if you're looking for a new sponsor or a temporary sponsor, we might be able to help. For those of you who have worked the program, had this book, had a spiritual awakening, have the time and willingness to work with others, stand or raise, go ahead and stand up. Fantastic. If you see one of those guys and you want some help, please see him after a meeting. All right, well, we're not getting to our big book study yet. We're continuing with the speaker-led meeting. We've got Ken C. back, and joining him is my guest. And they're going to be talking about the traditions of SAA. So, guys, the floor is yours now.
We'll go ahead and cover that.
We'll be on page 563.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to read the...
Now that's in a fourth edition. If you're in a third edition, it's going to be 565.
The 12 traditions, this is the long form. Our SAA experience has taught us that each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is, or Sex Addicts Anonymous, is but a small part of a great whole. SAA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward. The second is, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Number three, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism or sex addiction. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought SAA membership ever depend on money or conformity. Any two or three sex addicts gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an SAA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. Number four, with respect to its own affairs, each SAA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect SAA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the ISO. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Number five, each SAA group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the sex addict who still suffers. Number six, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to SAA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An SAA group as such should never go into business. Secondary aids to SAA, such as clubs, hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that if necessary they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence such facilities ought not use the SAA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, SAA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals as well as other places of recuperation ought to be well outside SAA and medically supervised. While an SAA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as an affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An SAA group can bind itself to no one. Number seven, the SAA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of SAA is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from anyone or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then too we review with much concern those SAA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated SAA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as feudal disputes over property, money, and authority. SAA should remain forever non-professional. This is number 8. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling sex addicts for fees or hire. But we may employ sex addicts where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-sex addicts. Such special services may well be recompensed, but our usual SAA 12-step work is never to be paid for. Number 9. Each SAA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the ISO are in effect our SAA ISO committee. I don't know how to really read that. ISO stands for International Service Organization. They are the custodians of our SAA tradition and the receivers of voluntary SAA contributions by which we maintain our SAA International Service Office in Houston. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal publication, the Outer Circle. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in SAA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. Number 10, no SAA group or member should ever in such a way as to implicate SAA express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, sex reform, sectarian religion, the list goes on. The SAA groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. Number 11, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think SAA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as SAA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. Number 12, finally, we of Sex Addicts Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all.
Thanks, Mike. Just to preface this a little bit, guys, AA never gave permission. They still own the copyright for the long form of the traditions. So that adaptation we made right there was not made with permission of AA, just so you know. They did give permission for some 200 plus fellowships to adapt the short form of the traditions to their particular fellowship. So the reason we like the long form is because it contains a lot more information about the intent of the short form. What is its purpose? I want to kind of also hit the prologue, which is on page 563 in your fourth edition?
You have a 61 in the fourth.
561 in the fourth, 563 in the third. To those now in its fold, Sex Addicts Anonymous has made the difference between misery and sobriety, and often the difference between life and death. SAA can, of course, mean just as much to uncounted sex addicts not yet reached. Therefore, no society of men and women ever had a more urgent need for continuous effectiveness and permanent unity. We sex addicts see that we must work together and hang together, else most of us will finally die alone. The 12 traditions of Sex Addicts Anonymous are, we SAAs believe, the best answer that AA's experience has yet given to those ever-urgent questions: how can SAA best function? How can SAA best stay whole and survive? On the next page, the 12 traditions are seen in their so-called short form, the form in general use today. This is a condensed version of the original long form, AA, of SAA's traditions, first printed in 1946 by AA. Because the long form is much more explicit and of possible historic value, it is also reproduced. Guys, a lot of people kind of pass over these traditions like they're nothing. We need to understand their history, understand the price that was paid in order to give them to us. These traditions were earned out of experience. They weren't just something they thought up. A lot of groups failed because they were learning these lessons. A lot of AA groups went under for that very reason. There were some spiritual principles that they were disregarding, and the result was that the group folded. Okay, well, the people that were in that group eventually went back out, got drunk, and died. And then there's the guys that could have been helped had the group been there. So everybody should understand the weight of this, that a lot of alcoholics died to give us these traditions. We should honor them with that sort of weight, lest we follow in their steps and not learn from them and learn by our own experience, which would be terrible. It's hard, guys. Well, let's just go straight to tradition one. And Mike, would you cover that long form one more time?
Yeah. Our SAA experience has taught us that each member of Sex Addicts Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. SAA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward.
There are several things that we need to look in particular in the tradition, but there's also an underlying meaning that we'll look at in a minute. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our trouble. Well, one of the best ways out of that is to work for the greater good. So when we walk in the door as an individual suffering sex addict, full of self-centeredness, once we get through the work, what we have to understand to stay sober is that we have to give to the larger community. And that means that we have to support the fellowship. Now, that may not be the fellowship with a big F, though we should be participating in that in some way, shape, or form, if only with our voice, but the fellowship with a small F in particular. And that's talked about over on page 164, the fellowship of the Spirit. That's the fellowship within the fellowship. So in order for us to continue as a group, we got to participate in the group. We got to sacrifice self to help the group. Everybody get that? Otherwise, there'll be no group and we'll end up exactly where those alcoholics did. I think it's important that when we talk about unity, what they're talking about here is a unity of around these principles of the 12 steps. The 12 traditions. These are the ground rules by which the group operates. The 12 steps are what we do to get sober. The 12 traditions are what we don't do as a group to stay whole. These are our ground rules that they united around back in 1955 when they were passed. I think that's correct. Is that correct? 55 or
40?
40, the tradition?
I thought it was 46.
Well, they were published in 46.
Okay.
But they passed the first general conference, I think it was 1950 or 55.
Okay.
One of those. But they were passed unanimously then. At that time, that's what they were thinking unity was. But in reality, every group, if we're going to be unified, we have to be unified around an ideal. We can't just say we're unified. You know, a union, a workers' union, they're unified around better work conditions, better wages, right? That's their theme. That's what they're supposed to be doing. We have to be unified as well around a theme or a goal of some sort, right? We can't just be unified to be unified. What's the point in that, right? A group has to have a purpose, a goal, a theme. If you'll flip in your books to page 17, I always like to go to this page whenever we're talking about the first tradition. And Mike, that second paragraph, four lines up from the bottom, could you read those last two sentences in that?
Starting with we?
The feeling.
The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined.
Guys, the common peril is that we suffer from sex addiction, right? That's what brought us in the door. But that's what we have in common with the guy who's still out there. What's the difference? We're not unified with him, right? You know, they use the analogy of cement. Cement is composed of many elements, right? But a common peril is just one element in that whole chemistry, right? But that's not going to keep us together. One element doesn't make a cement, does it? Okay. Go ahead and read the first two sentences of the next paragraph.
The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action.
Guys, this is what we have to be unified about. You know, the title to this chapter, there is a solution. We have to be unified not only on what our solution is, but how to get there. That's why we go to this book. We know that if we stick to this book, we're not going to deviate from each other. We're going to carry a common message, a common theme, a common goal. This is what we're unified about. Not just our program of recovery, but the specific, precise, clear-cut directions for working them. So, you know, it's not just... Guys, let's think about this. You put any three alcoholics in a room, or three sex addicts for that matter, in a room, you lock them up with one issue to talk about, and when you're done, they're going to have 30 different opinions. They can't unify with themselves on these issues. But look at this. These guys are so unified that they work together in brotherly and harmonious action to do this. This is the one thing that they are agreed upon. They come in the door with lots of different opinions, lots of different ideas about all kinds of different things. But they felt so strongly about this one thing that they unified about it such that they unified such that they agreed to work in brotherly and harmonious action to bring it about. We have a solution. Now, the solution they talked about was over on page 44, where they talk about the common problem and the common solution. Right in the middle of that first paragraph, if
when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking or acting out, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably a sex addict. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer.
A spiritual experience is our common solution. Now, our common method for bringing that about is something called the 12 steps. That's our program of action. That's what we do. That's what we're joined in brotherly and harmonious action. That's where we link arm to arm and stand shoulder to shoulder in the trenches, right? This is where we face the front line, and this is how we do it. We stick to this book because we know that it is purely 12-step, and we'll get into a lot of that. So that's kind of tradition one. Mike, you got anything to add on that?
Just that as we go through these traditions, they all ask you to sacrifice something. It usually comes down to my way or my opinion or what I would rather do, or when unity is the goal, You know, when we have a better chance of survival if the group survives, then I'm going to be asked to set aside some of my personal goals and desires so that the group survives. So as we go through these things, kind of keep in the back of your mind what that particular tradition is asking you to let go of or to not manhandle. You know what I'm saying? There's a sacrifice in most of these, if not every one of them. And that's all I got.
Thanks, Mike. I'm going to really throw everybody for a loop here. I think the rest of the steps, or the rest of the traditions, they're kind of hard to talk about without hitting the most important one. So I'm going to skip out of order. Because most of these traditions go to support the most important tradition. And we just talked about it, our solution. So let's skip to tradition 5. Mike?
Our SAA experience has taught us that each SAA group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the addict who still suffers.
Guys, real quick, I want you to peruse all 12 of these traditions in the long form. And I want you to look for any italicized writing. Any.
Squiggly writing.
Squiggly writing, as Joe McHugh likes to say. Or Charlie, was it Charlie P. that said squiggly? Either both of them said it, I think.
It was Joe, yeah. Or was it Charlie? I don't remember.
How many places do you see squiggly writing in these traditions?
Just 5.
Just that one place, huh?
Two.
Where else?
Very beginning.
Oh,
very beginning,
so our SAA experience has taught us that. So, okay, that's important too. Thanks, Jeremy. That these things are not based on theories. This is experience. Okay, so let's go straight to the fifth tradition. Bill emphasized things that were important by using italicization. So this is the one tradition that has italicized writing in it. This is the one tradition that is redundantly stated. One primary. Don't those mean the same thing? He's trying to make a real important point. It's better that we do one thing well than many things poorly. That's what Dr. Bob said. And this is a lesson that they learned from the Washingtonians. And this was right early 19th century, a group of guys who were trying to stay sober from alcohol did so by confessing, meeting together, and telling war stories. They did not have any primary, they did not have a program of action. And they didn't have any traditions to guide them. They pretty quickly started to segue into other problems, thinking, well, this is the key. We can solve the world's problems this way, and started to get into abolition. Not that that's not a worthy cause, but we're here for one thing and one thing only. How to stay sober from our addictive sexual behaviors. We do that one way and one way only in this fellowship, and that's by spiritual awakening that results from the 12 steps.
The Washingtonians and the Oxford group the same, or is that different?
They're different. Washingtonians disappeared after about 30 years.
Was that?
The Washingtonians?
Yes.
There were a group of alcoholics in the early 19th century, like early 1800s.
Right before the Civil War.
Yeah, they only last 1830s to about 1860 is about all they lasted. And they stayed sober by telling war stories and being accountable to each other and meeting on a regular basis. But they had no program of action. Okay?
And they lacked unity. One of the reasons they broke up was because half mm-hmm. of them, they brought into the fellowship the outside issue of slavery. And some of them were for, some of them were against, and then they got into the so-called wet-dry issue. You know, some were actively seeking to have alcohol eliminated, and some were saying, no, that's wrong. So they let those outside issues in. They didn't have traditions to lean on. They let those outside issues in, and they broke up. They just disappeared.
They didn't seem to learn anything. Yeah, they didn't break up. They just actually kind of evaporated. They didn't learn their lessons from their experience. And this is kind of one of the reasons why we have these traditions, is to document the lessons that these early 12-steppers learned. Okay, so each group has only one reason to exist. Well, first of all, it needs to be a spiritual entity. And we're going to tie this in with the last part, carrying its message. What is our message and how do we become a spiritual entity? Well, we talked about that in Tradition 1. Our message is contained in the 12th step. Let's turn to page 60. Mike, would you read the 12th step?
Having had a spiritual awakening, as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to sex addicts and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Okay, so guys, we got one message. What is it? That we had a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We did not have a spiritual awakening as the result of coming to meetings. We did not have a spiritual experience as the result of doing enough therapy, going to church enough, etc., etc., etc. Those are all great and wonderful things. But if those things are working for you, why are you in here? We're here for 12-step. We work the 12 steps to have a spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening removes our obsession. Let's talk about this just for a second. I want you to flip in the back of the book just a little bit further. Well, actually, yeah, a little bit further. To spiritual experience. Is it further back or further forward?
I've got page 567 in the fourth edition.
569.
In the third. That first paragraph says it. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from sex addiction has manifested itself in many different forms. Guys, a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is a personality change sufficient to remove my obsession. When I know that I've had the spiritual awakening, when I'm no longer obsessing. If I'm still obsessing, maybe I need to look back at the work. Maybe I better go find a new sponsor. And guys, I apologize. I'm going to try and keep myself accountable to you. I can easily get off into left field into a sponsorship workshop. We're not going to do that here. So please keep me on the straight and narrow with this. We're sticking to the traditions this time. We can do a sponsorship workshop some other time. Nudge me, Mike, when I get off course.
Right.
Okay. But you see, so we ought to be a spiritual entity. How do we become a spiritual entity? By the majority of us having had a spiritual awakening, right? And guys, this is somewhere that modern 12-step groups are way off course, 12-step fellowships, is they encourage newcomers, if they don't have a meeting they have access to start a meeting. But if the guy hasn't worked the steps and he starts a meeting, what message is that group carrying if no one's had a spiritual awakening?
It's not important.
A sick message. And boy, they're going to sit around there twiddling their thumbs saying, well, what do we do next? Maybe I should ask my therapist. Maybe I should ask my priest. And before you know it, we're either in group therapy or we're in outside issues and we're not working the steps anymore. Our groups only have one reason to exist, to carry that message. We only do one thing, that we had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. If we're trying to do something else, we're on the wrong path. So the majority of us should have been spiritually awakened as a result of these steps. And if you want to start a group, don't just start a group. You start with one of you working the steps with someone who has had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And then if you want to start a group, don't focus on starting a group. They tell you over in A Vision for You how to start a group. You don't start a group. You find the next guy who wants to recover. And you watch his actions. You see if he's willing to do the work and you take him through. He gets the spiritual awakening And now there's two of you. Then the two of you go find a third. And then the three of you go find a fourth. And before you know it, you've got a meeting. That's how to start a healthy meeting. You start with people who have been spiritually awakened as a result of these steps. So we got one message. We got nothing else. If you had a spiritual awakening as a result of therapy, that's fantastic. You're in the wrong fellowship. Go start another one. If you had a spiritual awakening as a result of going to church enough, there's plenty of them out there. Go join one of those. If you had a spiritual awakening as a result of attending meetings, great. You're still in the wrong fellowship. You need an attending. You need to revive the Washingtonians. God bless. I hope that works out this time. So, you know, that's not our course of action that keeps us, that gets us to the spiritual awakening. That's the only message we have. We don't have a message of 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, that's not a bad thing if you're going to 90 healthy meetings, right? Okay. You got anything to add on that?
Just that the world will tell you that our primary reason to exist is sobriety, and it's not. Our primary reason to exist is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, and sobriety will be maintained in that way. But you know, that's the popular misconception, is what our purpose is. Our purpose, you know, in working the steps, is to fit ourselves for service to God, and the way we exercise that is to carry the message.
And then the side effect, the runoff,
yeah,
is sobriety, removal of the obsession. Okay? Guys, if we're truly powerless over our addiction, then any focus on our addiction is pointless. What our job is to focus on what we do have power on. Over, and that's our relationship with our higher power. We can make a decision to work a system that puts us in relationship with God and keeps us in relationship with God and helps grow that relationship with God. But we got no other choices. Nowhere in these steps does it tell us that our power of choice is returned or that we can manage our lives again. This is 100% about how to dedicate my life to God. Does it mean I abandon everything? Does it mean I quit my job and sell everything? And no, because then I'd be part of the problem and not part of the solution. I got to be part of the solution. I got to add to the world instead of taking from it. Okay, so everybody understands that this is the most important tradition. This is the only reason for a group to exist. I'm not saying we don't do things like go bowling together or go to the movies together or do other things together. But I got to say, this is what we're primarily about. This is the main focus. All that other stuff is extraneous. All that other stuff is meant to support this idea that we help the next guy. We go carry the message to them. And that's a critical thing, is that it says in there that we carry the message to the sex addict that still suffers. It doesn't mean they're not still suffering in here, but it means we got to go out there too.
Oh, we don't just get to sit here and wait.
We don't get to just sit here and wait for them to drop in our lap. No. We got to go out there and find them. We got to get outside of the meeting and do some work. You want to know how to do that? Boy, they got some good suggestions over in A Vision for You. Working with others.
And in a practical sense, we've got lists of places. Way back houses and halfway houses and places to go.
Treatment centers, jails, yeah. Detox wards, stabilization units.
My sponsor likes to hang out on the front porch of the 24-hour club and just talk to people.
Well, I tell you guys, go buy a pack. I don't care if you smoke or not. Go buy a pack of cigarettes. Sit on the front porch of the way back house and hand them out one at a time. Talk to every single person who smokes there. See what you can do for them. You don't have to necessarily talk 12-step. Just ask them how their day is going.
Or just, you know, just the act of that, you know, getting out of yourself. I mean, I'm not a cold caller, but that's as close as it gets. You know, I'm in sales. And if unfortunately, I'm not a cold caller in sales, but this is kind of like saying, yeah, just go hang out and talk to people. If, you know, if the subject of sex addiction isn't appropriate or doesn't come up, that's fine, but you're out of yourself for that time. And you know, focusing on something besides my own selfish ends has an incredible spiritual benefit.
Boy, I hear people, well, what is your relapse prevention plan? 10, 11, and 12. It's, you know, I don't need a trigger list. I don't need any of that. I stay on my 10, 11, 12, and there's no need for worrying about my relapse. Temptation comes, I'm going to go, that's a bad idea. I got to go somewhere. And I'm headed to the 2-4. That's critical. It's critical to have in your life a place where you can go get out of yourself at any time of the day or night. We're greatly blessed in this area to have a place like the 24-hour club. You can go there at any time of the day or night. You wake up in the middle of the night and the obsession is all over you, get in the car and head down there. Grab a pack of smokes on your way. You got anything else on the fifth tradition?
No, that's you hit carrying and you hit spiritual. I think we're there.
Okay. Well, guys, that's the reason I skipped to that is because this is the hub. All the other traditions support that fifth tradition. So let's start looking at it. I'm going to go to the short form, the ironically short form of tradition two, because it's actually, the ironic part is that it's actually longer. It says, go ahead and read that.
Our SA experience has taught us that for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
Guys, a spiritual awakening. Let's think about that. I have brought to a conscious state my spiritual self. What is spirituality? It's a conscious living relationship with that each of us calls God. Bless you. So that's what I'm supposed to be about. I'm supposed to be connected to God. If I'm going to find and seek and do God's will, I got to be in a relationship with God, right? Okay? So if God's going to be the authority of my life and I'm a voting member of this group, I need to be spiritually awakened in order to vote. I need to be seeking God's will in that vote. Right? Does that make sense? That's how we're a spiritual entity. The most of us are spiritually awakened so that when we come to a group conscience, the people that vote are the ones that have been spiritually awakened. The ones for whom the obsession has been removed and they're living the spiritual life. Does that make sense? Well, they're gonna point to several things about what we should be doing in a group conscience and several of the other traditions, and I'm going to skip to one of them right now in Tradition 12, and that's placing principles before personalities. Again, guys, if this is God's group, we know it's God's group because most of them have been spiritually awakened. When we go to vote on an issue, we're not here to vote personal agendas. We're here to look at the traditions and whatever issue is before us and say, what are the traditions telling us about what we're about to do? Should we go forward? Should we stop? You know, that's how we know what's God's will, is because we know these principles are right. If we know these principles are right, then we got to look at how they apply to whatever it is. And we vote that. There have been many times in a group conscience where the group wanted to, or that, you know, an idea came forward and we were talking about it and everybody was all pumped up about it. And then someone said, but wait, in Tradition 6 says this. And then I go, crap. You know, it was something I really wanted the group to do. I thought it was a really great idea. But then all of a sudden I see that it's a violation of one of our traditions, and I go, I really want this to happen, but I got to vote the principles, not what I want. Sometimes the principles hold us back from doing other things, but you know what? That's a good thing. Because everything that we're supposed to do happens on God's schedule, not our own. Think about God's schedule. God's will's been happening for a few thousand years, guys. It'll probably go on a good long while after each of us is dead. So, things happen on God's schedule. We need to take a deep breath, and if it's not happening the way we want it to, good grief. How long has Primary Purpose Group been voting on this website or talking about this website? Probably a good 6 months, and we're still not there. We still haven't even voted, you know, to get it up and running yet. But good grief, you know, it happens on God's schedule. Our contractor is chomping at the bits. Well, when's this going to happen? It happens on the schedule of the group conscience. Got anything to add on that?
On two, it says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. And I notice over in the steps that when we refer to God, it's God as we understand him. In step three, it says, made us a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. And then down in 11, improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him. And in this second tradition, they editorialize, and it's the only place in the book that I've found that they editorialize on God, saying he is a loving God. And if you believe this bottle of Coke is loving, it can be God if that's what you believe. And so I just want to point that out. I've worked with some people that had a strained relationship with God and really seemed like they didn't have a concept of a loving God. But if you don't have that concept, ask for it. I'm not saying you have to have it, because you're welcome to have God as you understand him. But for our group conscience, it's a loving God. And I just want to point that out.
One other thing is the word may. I don't know why, and I've been to several conferences. I've asked quite a few old-timers. Pat C. wouldn't talk to me at all, so I couldn't ask him. The word may was removed from the SAA version of this step, or tradition. I don't know why. But to me, if I say that I definitely speak for God, y'all are going to call the guys in the white coats on me. And just because a small group of us thinks we speak for God, well, you know what? I bet the ATF will line up out here pretty soon.
Don't break the
rule. Look, guys, it's arrogance on a group level to assume we always speak for God. Now, we as individual servants of the group conscience honor that decision of the group conscience as though it was an expression of God's will. But to assume always that we definitely speak for God is arrogance. So it says may. God may express himself in our group conscience. God may not. If the group is not a spiritual entity, probably won't. But I'll tell you how God always expressed himself, and that's through history. If God is everything, then God has a plan. If God has a plan, everything's going exactly according to plan. And if we vote to do something, we know that it was God's will by whether it got done or not. We know whether it's God's will ultimately by whether the group succeeds or fails. If we vote to do something that's going to require money, if the money shows up, we know it was God's will. If we vote to do something that's going to require enough volunteers to get involved and actually put some work into it, then if enough volunteers don't show up, then we know it's not God's will. Does that make sense? We honor it as though God was speaking through the group conscience. But we have the humility to admit that we may have been off track when we look back on it and say, well, you know, we may need to look at that. And you're going to know how healthy a group is by A, if it's carrying the message, and B, if what it votes on actually comes to pass. If we vote to do something and it happens, we know that we're on track. Does that make sense? Anything else on two?
No, I think that's good.
Well, one other thing, and we mentioned this before. Again, if you want to be a voting member of a group conscience, you got to ask yourself, have you had the spiritual awakening? Are you living in a relationship with God? Are you doing it by a method we call the 12 steps? Otherwise, sit there, be quiet, and listen to those people who have. When they ask for a vote, keep your hands by your side. Another thing, and this kind of pulls in tradition four, but you know, we should have a home group. We may have more than one home group, but if we're just auditing a group, if we're just going to a group to fish for newcomers, if we're just going to a group because we're in town that weekend, if we're not a regular member at that group, if we're not making a commitment to regular attendance, regular support financially, regular support through service, it's not our home group. And when it comes time for group conscience, I keep my mouth shut and my hands down.
Quick question.
Chris.
You said the SEA organization took the word may out.
Yeah.
So how is that sentence restructured without that word?
May not have it right here in front of me. The group, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he expresses, no, as expressed in our group conscience.
Okay. Because if you put another verb in there, there's still some sort of implication that he's expressing himself or not. So that's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were trying to remove gender. They're trying to be gender neutral, and as a result, change the implication. Jeremy?
The SAA, they just have a book that has this rewritten, or is there some other?
We'll talk about the SAA book some other time.
Okay.
God bless.
Not a fan.
Keep coming back, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Take what you like and leave the rest.
Yeah, meeting makers make it, bud.
Yeah.
Go to town.
Take what you like and leave the rest.
Yeah, okay. Mike, you want to hit that third one?
Yeah. Our SAA experience, edit that out, by the way. Our SAA experience has taught us that our membership ought to include all who suffer from sex addiction. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought SAA membership ever depend on money or conformity. Any two or three sex addicts gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an SAA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. My take on that is that it means that you're an SAA member if you say you are. You're a sex addict if you say you are. And as long as you want to stop acting out, you can come to this meeting and sit in the chair.
This book also explains a model for addiction. And in order for the 12-step program to be helpful to you, your addiction must fit that model. And we talked about that in the meditation, the guided meditation that Darren took us through, was that I have a tendency to go beyond where I planned once I start, and I have an obsession of the mind that convinces me to start again and again and again, despite my most sincere desire to not start again and again and again. That's sex addiction. It says you need to be suffering from it. It doesn't say that your wife needs to be suffering from it. It doesn't say that your boss or the law or anybody else. It says that in order for you to come in here, you have to be suffering. And so, therefore, you need to have a desire to quit for good and all. You don't need to have, I mean, if you just have a desire to make her leave you alone or get the law off your back or whatever, keep from losing your job, great, that's fantastic. You know, you say you have a desire to stop your addictive sexual behaviors, that gives you a right to sit in our chair, but it doesn't give you a right to say a darn thing. Sit down, shut up, and listen. You might learn something. You might learn that this place isn't for you. you might learn that this is, you're not actually suffering from sex addiction. God bless. That's fantastic. At least you learned something. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. How do we recover in here?
12 steps.
By the 12 steps. How are we going to know you wish to recover? By getting a freaking sponsor who's been spiritually awakened and doing what he tells you to do. Get busy. You're going to sit around in our meeting for 6 months? I don't think you have a desire to recover. I think it is our duty as recovered members to approach such an individual and say, after a couple of weeks, say, what's your deal? Have you got a sponsor yet? What step are you on? Where are you in the work? Do you have a service commitment? What are you doing for the addict that still suffers today? We have an obligation to approach these people and ask them some pertinent questions, because we only got one program to offer. We're not saying there's not other programs. We're saying that the 12-step program is ours, and we got nothing else. You want something else? You want another fellowship. Okay? That sounds harsh. Gee, sorry. We're arrogant enough. We need to keep out of arrogance. We become arrogant when we think we can be all things to all people. Again, Dr. Bob said it's better that we do one thing well than many things poorly. We do 12-step, period. Money or conformity? You got to dress a certain way to get in here? No. Well, yeah, you do. Because we act out by dressing certain ways, right? You're still in the mode of picking up partners. Imagine going to an AA meeting looking for a drinking buddy. If you're still in the addiction, if you're still dressing inappropriately, yeah. But conformity, do you have to wear a tie? No. Do you have to make sure that your hair is a certain length, or that your beard is a certain length? They're obviously not.
Do we get blazers?
Nope, no red blazers. You don't have to walk in here with a trench coat on, okay?
Please don't.
Yeah. Be sure you have something on underneath it, okay? Conformity. Any two or three sex addicts gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an SAA group. Well, okay, sobriety, but how do we get that sobriety? It is a side effect as a result of us being in a relationship with God. We maintain that relationship with God through a system called the 12 steps. Everybody get the logical progression there? Okay. Provided that as a group they have no other affiliations. Guys, a group that's wanting to recover by the 12 steps from sex addiction, but who's restricted only to medical professionals or helping professionals or legal professionals, they can't call themselves an SAA group. They have another affiliation, don't they? They can't do it. They can't officially call themselves an SAA group. Our door is open to everyone. And it is the great, this is the great equalizer. You walk through that door, every letter after your last name stays out there. It doesn't come in here with us. You help people professionally for addiction before you walk in that door. When you walk through that door, you're just another sex addict who wants to stop. You are nothing else. God bless. That's wonderful that you do all that stuff outside of here. That's outside of here. In here, you're just a schmo. You're an everyday schmo who doesn't know how to stay sober. Okay?
The other affiliations, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation, and at least one reason is because that would conflict with the fifth tradition. If we have another affiliation, then we're going to have another purpose for that affiliation. And if we have another purpose for that affiliation, it's going to get in the way of the purpose for this affiliation. So, if my church were to sponsor the group, or that we were all in, you know, in that situation, then, you know, for lots of reasons, that's going to get in the way of us accomplishing our primary purpose. So that's why, you know, other affiliations compromise the fifth tradition.
You want to hit that fourth one?
With respect, our SAA experience has taught us that with respect to its own affairs, each SAA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect SAA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the International Service Organization. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount.
You got anything?
Man, that's so long and so pretty well stated. I don't have a whole lot on that one.
Well, guys, you know, again, have a home group. Support your home. You may have more than one home group. That's no issue. But if you're just visiting a group, if you're not participating in the service, supporting it financially, attending, making a commitment to attend regularly, don't do anything with that group that might influence it. It's not your group. It's their group. Have a home group where you actually participate in the group. More than just show up at a meeting. Sacrifice for the larger picture, right? Because this is one way that I have seen certain members influence other groups. Is, you know, we didn't like the group, the way a group was doing something, so a bunch of us went over there and took over their group conscience and changed their format. It was wrong. And amends had to be made. There's been animosity ever since.
I think about how that compounds, Ken, because if you don't keep the conformity and keep it grounded, and that happens all over, eventually you don't have any consistency at all, and you've lost the sole purpose. So that can be part of the way.
Well, that's an important thing to think about. You know, if we're doing other things besides 12-step in our groups, and we have some newcomer or some visitor show up, and he's watching what we're doing, how are we affecting SAA as a whole or neighboring groups? That's something to think about. Now, what other groups do is none of our business. They're only accountable to their own group conscience. But we're accountable to ours. And we stay out of outside issues because we don't want to negatively influence other groups. We don't want to cast a bad image on any of them. When we want someone who's new to SAA, when they walk in our door, to know that SAA is about 12-step. Okay?
And it doesn't say that we subjugate our group conscience to the next group down the street. It just says we consult with them and we confer with the trustees of the ISO. So it's kind of like a, you know, this is what we're doing. We want to let you guys know. We're interested in what you think. And then that information is taken to the group conscience and evaluated. So, but it's not, you're not telling the other groups they can tell you whether or not you can do this or that, but that you take that feedback that they give you and consider it, because, you know, they're a spiritual entity too. And so it's helpful when our spiritual entity and their spiritual entity are unified, at least at the very basic level.
That's a critical thing. Is this thing is about consideration. This tradition is about consideration. How other groups conduct their meeting is none of our darn business. How they do things is none of our business. And guys, here's another way that we violate this tradition is when we talk badly about other groups. Now, I can say that I tried it their way and it didn't work for me. I tried it their way and I couldn't stay sober the way they do their stuff. That's as much as I can say. I can't say that it doesn't work. I don't know. It may work for some of them. God bless them. That's fantastic. I know it didn't work for me. So I went and did something else. I went and found the original instructions for working the steps and found somebody who had a spiritual awakening that way and said, please show me. So it's important that we remember we don't disparage other members of the fellowship. We don't disparage other meetings. You know, every meeting has its own personality the way every person has their own personality. And we need to respect that. That's their business and none of ours. That didn't work for me. Great, that's fantastic. I'll do that. We do this. Okay?
Well, it's, and as I suggested at the beginning of this, look for what each of the traditions is asking you to give up, to sacrifice. And so far it's self-will a lot is what it's looking like. But in this particular one, the way I want things to be isn't important. It's the group conscience. That's paramount.
Okay. Do you think we have time to hit the sixth one, or
what are we out of here?
Darren,
what are we done?
No, keep on going.
We're okay.
Take it up to about 10 o'clock.
Okay, cool. You want to hit that long one, Mike?
Yeah. Our SAA experience has taught us that problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to SAA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An SAA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids to SAA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the SAA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, SAA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside SAA and medically supervised. While an SAA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An SAA group can bind itself to no one.
Wow. Yeah, it's the longest one. Guys, we, as, and they're going to couple this with the seventh tradition when we cover it next time, that we as a fellowship have taken a vow of poverty. We don't accumulate stuff because stuff binds us to a geographic location or binds us to, and we can't be bound by anything. We have to have the freedom to go where the wind blows because the wind blows where God needs us. Let's say the rent in this facility goes up and this group can no longer afford to pay that rent. We don't have a lease so that we can go somewhere else if we need to. So, you know, the rent goes up here. God wants us where the rent is cheaper, doesn't he? Well, usually that's the neighborhood where we're needed the most, isn't it? Doesn't that make sense? God wants us where we can do his work. We're not being very helpful to him if we're stuck in one spot. We are a flowing entity. We are an entity that goes where we're needed. Plain and simple. And guys, understand that a lot of these traditions were born out of the experience of things that will distract us from our primary purpose. We get involved in a bunch of business stuff about how to manage the club, how to manage the lease, how to manage, you know, this stuff that we've accumulated, we're going to forget what we're supposed to be doing. And this is one of the things that they, out of their experience, they figured out, wait, this takes us away from tradition five. We got to remember we're about one thing, carrying the message. And if we're stuck here, if we have to spend most of our time cleaning this place up, most of our time managing the place, most of our time scheduling this, that, or the other thing in this facility, we've forgotten what we're supposed to be doing, right? We're supposed to be carrying the message. That stuff is all well and fine and supports 12-step work, but it isn't actual 12-step work. So we need to keep our management of stuff down to a minimum so that we can focus on the one thing we're about. And I'm going to ask some questions. Guys, talking out, there are many, many different types of psychotherapy out there. Many of them have different goals. If we mention one therapist, are we not endorsing that one brand? If we talk about having gone to a therapist, are we not even passively endorsing that therapy is what we should be doing?
Even if we say, look, I'm not endorsing him, but we're still endorsing him, just by saying.
Yeah. That's implying, isn't it?
That's implying.
We do one thing here. That's 12-step. Not saying therapy's not a good thing. Oops.
I go back to, you said at the beginning, these are painful lessons that they have learned along the way. And that's probably one where there was an abundance of money or whatever, it became an influence, it became a distraction, and it ruined something.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to project that out and consider how those other things, just lobbies in D.C. today, you know, how that can influence us. Look, don't worry about how to get there, but what the impact will be, just working on an area of poverty. That's the condition, just stay with it.
That's the key, guys, is that if we're focused on the one thing, all the other things work out. If we're focused on carrying the message to the sex addict that still suffers, then all our problems of property, money, and authority will take care of themselves. If we're focused on that one thing, we'll all work together in brotherly and harmonious action towards that one thing. But if we allow this stuff, if we get involved in other things and start thinking, oh, we need to become, you know, this group needs to become this big, you know, thing so that we can influence the world of recovery, and oh, we're on the wrong track. Our program
Ellen
is simple.
Something today, and we need to step up and throw our power around.
Yeah. Our program is simple. We share as recovered sex addicts with the guy who wants to recover how we did that. And that doesn't require property, money, or authority.
Yeah, Bill had a fantasy of a chain of hospitals spanning the United States that, you know, and they'd have educational components, and, you know, it kind of all came crashing down, fortunately. But that's where this came from, and I was trying to find it, and it might be in another book besides this. I can't.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, it's in AA Comes of Age. You want some good history on how these things came about, how these traditions came about, read AA Comes of Age.
Okay.
It's very fascinating. Good stuff.
And I was also looking for, there is one reference to therapy in this book, and it says, upon therapy, we have no essentially corner on the market, and you know, the therapy that this book, if I may diverge from what we're talking about, the therapy that this book endorses is a therapy of action, and it's not a therapy of talking. It's a therapy of action, and there's 12 steps to it. So if you want therapy, take 12 steps, in my opinion. I've got it highlighted, I just can't find it.
So we got to remember, guys, that when we talk in a meeting, we got to remember whatever we're bringing up. If we can't rectify it with this book, we might be endorsing something else. We got to be careful about that. We know this book is 100% 12-step. It is the purest 12-step document out there. We know that there are no outside enterprises, influences. It is 12-step. So if I can't justify what I'm saying with what's in this book, I need to consider keeping my mouth shut. Okay? I think that's a good spot. I think we ought to cover 7 through
next time.
Through 12 next time.
Do we have any questions for the guys? Got a few more minutes.
I found what I was referring to on page XXI. It says, upon therapy for the alcoholic himself, we surely have no monopoly. It is our great hope that all who have as yet found no answer may begin to find one in the pages of this book. XXI.
Forward to the second edition?
Yeah. Forward to the second edition.
Addiction.
Second edition, last paragraph.
Okay. That will give it back to Darren.
Any other questions for the guys, for Ken or Mike?
Yes.
Just the 24-hour club.
24-hour club. Let me stop this, because we don't want to endorse any outside issues.